Chapter 12, Reconstruction, 1865 to 1877. Why it matters. The nation faced difficult problems after the Civil War. The first issue was how to bring the South back into the Union. Lincoln had wanted to make reunion relatively easy. After he died, Congress designed a plan that focused on punishing the South and ensuring that African Americans had the right to vote. These policies increased hostility between the regions. Pressures on the South to reform eased with the Compromise of 1877. The impact today. The Reconstruction era has permanently affected American society. The 14th and 15th Amendments provide constitutional protections for all Americans. The radical Republicans' rule so antagonized the South that the region remained solidly Democratic for nearly a century. Section 1. Reconstruction Plans. An American Story. Houston Holloway was ready for freedom. By 1865, the 20-year-old enslaved man had toiled under three different slaveholders. President Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation, delivered in 1863, had freed him, but only in theory. The proclamation freed enslaved persons in the Confederacy, but because the Union could not enforce its laws in Confederate territory, many African Americans in the South continued to endure a life of bondage. Holloway knew that his only hope was a Northern victory in the Civil War. Freedom finally came in the spring of 1865 when Union troops overran his community in Georgia. Holloway rejoiced upon being freed. "I felt like a bird out of a cage. Amen, amen, amen. I could hardly ask to feel better than I did that day." The week passed off in a blaze of glory. Quoted in A Short History of Reconstruction. The Reconstruction Battle begins. Houston Holloway and millions like him faced freedom in a devastated South. By 1865, large areas of the former Confederacy lay in ruins. A traveler on a railroad journey through the South described the region as a desolated land, adding, "Every village and station we stopped at presented an array of ruined walls and chimneys standing useless and solitary." Union troops and cannons had left few southern cities untouched. Describing Columbia, the capital of South Carolina, a northern reporter noted, "Two-thirds of the buildings in the place were burned, including everything in the business portion. Not a store, office, or shop escaped." The devastation had left the South's economy in a state of collapse. The value of land had fallen significantly. Confederate money was worthless. Roughly two-thirds of the transportation system lay in ruins, with dozens of bridges destroyed and miles of railroad twisted and rendered useless. Most dramatically of all, the emancipation of African Americans had thrown the agricultural system into chaos. Until the South developed a new system to replace enslaved labor, it could not maintain its agricultural output. The President and Congress grappled with the difficult task of reconstruction, or rebuilding, after the war. They had to decide under what terms and conditions the former Confederate states would rejoin the Union. Lincoln's plan. The problem of how to bring the southern states back into the Union began shortly after the Civil War started. As Union forces advanced into Tennessee, Arkansas, and Louisiana in 1862, President Lincoln appointed military governors for the regions under Union control. He also began developing a plan for restoring a regular government in those states. Lincoln wanted a moderate policy that would reconcile the South with the Union instead of punishing it for treason. In December 1863, he set forth his plan in the Proclamation of Amnesty and Reconstruction. He offered a general amnesty or pardon to all Southerners who took an oath of loyalty to the United States and accepted the Union's proclamations concerning slavery. When 10% of a state's voters in the 1860 presidential election had taken this oath, they could organize a new state government. The Radical Republicans. Resistance to Lincoln's plan surfaced at once among the more radical Republicans in Congress. Led by Representative Thaddeus Stevens of Pennsylvania and Senator Charles Sumner of Massachusetts, the radicals did not want to reconcile with the South. They wanted, in Stevens' words, to revolutionize Southern institutions, habits, and manners. The Radical Republicans had three main goals. First, they wanted to prevent the leaders of the Confederacy from returning to power after the war. Second, they wanted the Republican Party to become a powerful institution in the South. Third, they wanted the federal government to help African Americans achieve political equality by guaranteeing their right to vote in the South. Congressional Republicans knew that once the South was restored to the Union, it would gain about 15 seats in the House of Representatives. Before the Civil War, the number of Southern seats in the House was based on the 3/5 compromise in the Constitution. According to this compromise, each enslaved person counted as only 3/5 of a free person. The abolition of slavery entitled the South to more seats in the House of Representatives. This would endanger Republican control of Congress, unless Republicans could find a way to protect African Americans' voting rights. Although radical Republicans knew that giving African Americans in the South the right to vote would help their party win elections, most were not acting cynically. Many had been abolitionists before the Civil War and had pushed Lincoln into making emancipation a goal of the war. They believed in a right to political equality for all Americans, regardless of their race. Senator Henry Wilson of Massachusetts summarized their position by saying, "Congress must see to it that the man made free by the Constitution is a free man indeed, that he can go where he pleases, work when and for whom he pleases, go into schools and educate himself and his children, that the rights and guarantees of the common law are his, and that he walks the earth proud and erect in the conscious dignity of a free man." The Wade Davis Bill. Caught between Lincoln and the radical Republicans was a large number of moderate Republicans. The moderates thought Lincoln was being too lenient, but they also thought the radicals were going too far in their support for African Americans. By the summer of 1864, the moderates and radicals had come up with a Reconstruction plan that they could both support as an alternative to Lincoln's and introduced it in Congress as the Wade Davis Bill. This bill required the majority of the adult white men in a former Confederate state to take an oath of allegiance to the Union. The state could then hold a constitutional convention to create a new state government. Each state's convention would then have to abolish slavery, reject all debts the state had acquired as part of the Confederacy, and deprive all former Confederate government officials and military officers of the right to vote or hold office. Although Congress passed the Wade Davis Bill, Lincoln blocked it with a pocket veto. That is, he let the session of Congress expire without signing the legislation. Although Lincoln sympathized with some of the radical goals, he felt that imposing a harsh peace would be counterproductive. The president wanted no persecution, no bloody work. Reading check. Summarizing. Why did President Lincoln favor a generous policy toward the South after the end of the Civil War? The Freedmen's Bureau. Lincoln realized that harsh Reconstruction terms would only alienate many whites in the South. Also, the South was already in chaos. The devastation of the war and the collapse of the economy left hundreds of thousands of people unemployed, homeless, and hungry. At the same time, the victorious Union armies had to contend with the large numbers of African Americans who flocked to Union lines as the war progressed. As Sherman marched through Georgia and South Carolina, thousands of freed African Americans, now known as freedmen, began following his troops seeking food and shelter. To help the freed people feed themselves, Sherman reserved all abandoned plantation land within 30 miles of the coast from Charleston, South Carolina to Jacksonville, Florida, for use by freed African Americans. Over the next few months, Union troops settled more than 40,000 African Americans on roughly 500,000 acres of land in South Carolina and Georgia. The refugee crisis prompted Congress to establish the Bureau of Refugees, Freedmen, and Abandoned Lands, better known as the Freedmen's Bureau. The Bureau was given the task of feeding and clothing war refugees in the South using surplus army supplies. Beginning in September 1865, the Bureau issued nearly 30,000 rations a day for the next year. Its activities helped prevent mass starvation in the South. The Bureau also helped formerly enslaved people find work on plantations. It negotiated labor contracts with planters, specifying the amount of pay workers would receive and the number of hours they had to work. It also established special courts to deal with grievances between workers and planters. Although many people in the North applauded the Bureau's efforts, they argued those who were formerly enslaved should be given 40 acres and a mule to support themselves. These people believed that the federal government should seize Confederate land and distribute it to emancipated African Americans. To others, however, taking land from plantation owners and giving it to freedmen seemed to violate the nation's commitment to individual property rights. Ultimately, Congress refused to support land confiscation. Although the Freedmen's Bureau failed to provide African Americans with land to make a new start, it did make a lasting and important contribution in the field of education. The Bureau worked closely with Northern charities to educate formerly enslaved African Americans. It provided housing for schools, paid teachers, and helped to establish colleges for training African American teachers. Reading check. Explaining. What were the purposes of the Freedmen's Bureau? Social Studies Skill Builder. Interpreting political cartoons. Why learn this skill? Do you enjoy reading the comics section in the newspaper? Many people enjoy reading comic strips. Cartoons also appear on the editorial page. These cartoons express opinions on political issues. Political cartoons are good sources of historical information because they reflect opinions on current events. Learning this skill. Political cartoonists rely mostly on images to communicate a message. By using caricatures and symbols, political cartoonists help readers see relationships and draw conclusions about events. A caricature exaggerates a detail, such as a subject's features, in a drawing. Cartoonists use caricature to create a positive or negative impression of a subject. For example, if a cartoon shows one figure three times larger than another, it implies that the larger figure is more powerful than the smaller one, or perhaps is a bully. A symbol is an image or object that represents something else. For example, a cartoonist may use a crown to represent a monarch. Symbols often represent nations or political parties. The bald eagle and Uncle Sam are common symbols for the United States, a bear often stands for Russia, and a dragon might be used to represent China. To analyze a political cartoon, first identify the topic and main characters, then read labels and messages, and note relationships between the figures and symbols. Review your knowledge of the cartoon's topic to determine the cartoonist's viewpoint and message. Practicing the skill. The political cartoon on this page, published in an 1872 newspaper, makes a statement about the Reconstruction years. After the Civil War, Southerners gave the nickname carpetbaggers to Northerners who moved south. Southerners claimed Northerners came with nothing but a small bag made from carpet fabric, ready to gain wealth at Southerners' expense. Study the cartoon, and then answer the following questions. 1. The figure at the top is President Ulysses S. Grant. What symbols are surrounding him? What do these symbols represent? Why do you think Grant is placed among them? 2. In what symbol is Grant sitting? What might this object represent? 3. What symbols depict the North? How are they shown? What does their appearance imply about the North's feelings about Reconstruction? 4. Summarize the cartoonist's opinion of Reconstruction and explain why you agree or disagree with this point of view.